All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. I started a new Instagram account.
Yes, you did.
As you know. This is so weird to talk about on the podcast, but, you know, my personal life, right?
Plug yourself.
So I have a skincare Instagram. I love skincare. Mm-hmm. It's called the.skincare.sitch.
Yes. As in Kim Possible.
Anything Kim Possible. That's why I picked it. It's because you said that, and I was like, yeah.
I think it makes her seem approachable because I'm like, oh, everyone loves Kim Possible.
Everyone loves Kim Possible. That's true. Well, I made my first reel this morning.
Yay.
That was exciting. I know. I was like, wow, reels.
Reels.
I've never dabbled in the reel.
That's exciting, though.
I know. I was like, I want to do what those TikTok kids do.
Yeah.
But I need longer than 15 seconds.
That's awesome. I've been thinking about starting, like, a film, like, account, because I follow a couple film accounts, and I'm like, I could do this. This is easy.
Why not? Why not?
Why not?
I've been thinking a lot about fan cams.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there are people who just have entire... This is what... Okay, I do wonder about this.
Mm-hmm.
Those people with, like, meme accounts or, like, fan cam accounts where all they do is, like, repost other people's stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they have, like, millions of followers. Do they make money off that?
How
could you even make money off that? Because it's not your own content.
Yeah.
Like, can you monetize that? I know, like, Drew Gooden has a YouTube video. If you guys don't know who Drew Gooden is, he's a commentary YouTuber that I like. But he has a video on that because one of his memes or videos or mm-hmm. something was posted to one of those meme accounts and they didn't tag him and then he asked them to tag him and they did, but like they didn't physically tag him. They just like put his name, so you'd have to search him.
That's so disrespectful.
Yeah, and then he made this big video about how like those meme accounts are really like low.
Yeah.
Especially when they like don't give credit to mm-hmm. the source.
Yeah.
And I was just like, do they make money off that?
I don't know. My favorite, like, what I was thinking about, because I follow this one Instagram called Cine Iconic.
Uh-huh.
And they just post, like, screenshots from movies
mm-hmm.
and, like, little interview bits and, like, just fun stuff that people like and, like, happy birthday to this celebrity.
Right.
And, like, look at these movies. So fun. Anyway, I just thought that's cool, like, talking about movies. But, like, yeah, I don't know about those people who just repost other people's content.
Do meme accounts make money? Yes.
Mm-mm.
I guess it depends on... Okay, so some people... If you make memes... Yeah, okay, this person reposts memes. This person makes $4,000 a month reposting memes. I guess it's because... Well, for one, I guess some people pay him to repost their meme.
Oh, okay.
And... Let's see. I guess that's probably how they make most of their money, is people pay them to repost their memes. I know also sometimes on those meme accounts you see, like, they'll be, like, the last slide will be, like, this little, like an ad for an app or, like, ads for dumb shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they also get paid for, like, that. It's just, like, you know... Actual real upstanding brands aren't reaching out to them.
True.
Because it's like, you're not really my audience.
Lokai bracelet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, you'll never believe what
this can do.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Anyway, so follow Allison on her new Instagram account.
So many people
follow. The.skincare.sitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sitch, I hate the word sitch, because sitch, I like the word sitch when you say it.
Yeah.
But when you see it spelled, you're like, that cannot be right.
That cannot be a real word.
But it is right.
It is right.
It's the correct way to spell it.
That's how Allison feels every time she sees Bradley Cooper in a movie. She's like, oh.
I'm like, that man acts?
He can act?
He acts too? And you're like, he doesn't do anything else.
He's an actor.
And I'm like, he acts also?
He has a BFA.
In addition to his country music career, which is not what I'm freaking convinced he
does not.
I keep thinking Bradley Cooper is like Garth Brooks.
He's from like the East Coast.
His country music career, in my eyes, has been wildly successful, allowing him to break into the movie industry.
No, I've always been an actor.
I keep being like, he's like, in my mind, he's
won a Tony.
He's literally the equivalent of Garth Brooks in my mind. I'm like, like, if Garth Brooks started acting,
Oscar nominated actor multiple times, won a Tony for The Elephant Man.
Garth Brooks. Yeah. I literally can't get it out. I know, but my mind says no. My mind
that
says,
can't be possible.
My mind says that's not true. It's like, He is. He's not an actor. Every time I see him, I'm like, he did a really good job. I'm really proud of him for doing that good of a job.
That's what he does.
And you're like, yeah, he always does. And I'm always like, I'm always surprised when he
went to school for acting.
I'm always like, wow, he's pretty good. You can make a career out of this, buddy. Always. Literally probably married to someone quite famous.
Him?
Isn't he?
He's divorced, but I don't think she was famous. I think she might have been a model. But I think he's divorced now. I've heard rumor. I'm a person in Joplin. I don't know. I've heard rumors though from podcasts that I listen to that he dabbles in the dick.
Oh,
which I wouldn't be surprised by.
He was married, but only for a year, and yeah, to a model.
Yeah. Anyway, he's always been an actor. He made his success in playing like the jock, like mean guy in like Bridesmaids and The Hangover. Not Bridesmaids.
So weird.
The Hangover and Wedding Crashers.
Oh, Wedding Crashers. That's so weird.
I know. And then he, like, got into dramatic roles and, you know, started directing stuff. And now he was in, I think his, like, Oscar breakout was Silver Linings Playbook.
No.
Which we did.
He released a country music song that was really popular. It was on the radio since I was a child. This is the timeline for Bradley Cooper that I imagine. He's always been a country music star since I was a child. He is wildly popular here. I've heard his songs multiple times, but never was interested because I don't listen to country music. And then he got into movies in the Silver Linings Playbook. He's never been in anything else.
No rom-coms before that.
And then I think that's why he got the Star Is Born role.
Well, he directed the Star Is Born, so he cast himself.
No, see, I thought he got it because he was a country music singer. And they were like, well, that's perfect.
And he learned how to sing for the role.
Oh, well, he didn't have to learn how to sing because he was already a singer. He didn't have to learn how to do shit.
So, Jane, your logic is pretty flawed.
I'm ready to start the rumor and perpetuate the rumor that Bradley Cooper was and always has been a country music star. And that anything else is not real. I'm ready to start that. And
do not even state otherwise.
Now I'm going to rewrite his Wikipedia page tonight.
They're going to be so pissed at you.
They're just going to rewrite it immediately.
They're going to be like, what the fuck is this chick on?
That's true. I'm going to really just start. I'm going to write like a book. The unauthorized biography of Bradley Cooper.
The acclaimed country music star.
I did not at all interview him or any sources.
This is just completely in my mind.
This is the unauthorized biography, completely unauthorized biography of Bradley Cooper. I'm going to write that. And it's gonna be called The Completely Unauthorized Biography of Bradley Cooper.
I love it.
In the title. That's the title of it.
All right, so today we're doing the 2020 Rebecca as a follow-up to our Patreon episode over the 1940 Rebecca directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
So if you want to hear us review that, jump on over to our Patreon. It's linked in the show notes.
Yep.
And $1, you can get access to that episode as well.
And all the other ones.
And all our other ones. And we have a lot.
A lot, guys.
We're coming up now on... This is our 85th.
So we're coming up on 100 episodes for the regular feed.
And Patreon, we probably got at least like 40.
At least 40.
So.
Tons of content.
That's where we review all of our new movies.
And maybe like indie movies more so there. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of listener requests that we don't feel like are big enough names to go on here. Go on to Patreon.
People who really like... our patrons who want to hear, you know, movies. If you're a patron and you want to hear a movie, we'll listen to you.
Yeah, basically. So
we're always looking for
movie suggestions. So hit up our Patreon. But today we're talking about the 2020 Rebecca. This was just released.
Just released earlier this month. It's Armie Hammer, who we love, from Sorry to Bother You, and Lily James, who played young Donna in Mamma Mia.
Yes.
Here we go again.
Lily James has been in other things too. Was she like a Nickelodeon star?
I don't know. She was in Downton Abbey. That's where I originally know her from. She was in Cinderella, that movie.
That's what it was.
I know her originally from Downton Abbey. She's great, though. She's so beautiful.
Yeah, she is. Okay, I'm going to work fast because my phone's almost dead. Here we go. Plot. While working as a companion to Mrs. Van Hopper...
Again, still the worst.
Yes. A rich American woman on holiday in Monte Carlo, an unnamed, naive young woman in her early 20s becomes acquainted with a wealthy Englishman, Maxim de Winter, a widower. After a fortnight of courtship, she agrees to marry him, and after the wedding and honeymoon, accompanies him to his mansion in Cornwall, the beautiful estate, Manderley.
So this is way more romantic than the 1941.
Yeah, they really spend quite a bit of time on the courting.
And, yeah, building their relationship, and also you learn a lot more about the second Mrs. De Winter, mm-hmm. the narrator. We learn a lot more about her and about her background because she's, you know, this is 2020, and you can give women backstories.
Yeah.
So
definitely they spend a lot more time building up. The one thing I think this movie does really well is, and I mean, this is just like a product of the fact that it's made in 2020 mm-hmm. and not in 1940, which is that it really translates the things that happen to a 2020 audience.
Yes.
Because Rebecca 1940 really, like, lacks some things that, yes. like, in 2020 we just expect to see or really want to see. Mm-hmm. Like, in 1940, the way she was, you know, romanced by...
Yeah, he was just, like, demanding
Laurence Olivier. They were like, that's nice.
Yeah.
But now it's like we want... Like,
Army Hammer is actually romancing yes. her. Yes. And they have sex on the beach, and it's hot.
It is hot. Her companion is a lot meaner.
Yeah, she's terrible, which makes you be like, oh, yeah, go away with him.
Versus in the first one, she's just annoying.
But this one, she's like...
This one, like, she's really
kind
mean.
Of a psychopath.
Oh, yeah, she's meanie.
Yeah. She, like, talks badly about her behind her back. She's really mean.
So, Mrs. Danvers, the sinister housekeeper, was profoundly devoted to the first Mrs. De Winter, Rebecca, who died in a boating accident about a year before Maxim and the second Mrs. De Winter met. She continually attempts to undermine Mrs. De Winter psychologically, subtly suggesting to her that she will never attain the beauty and charm her predecessor possessed. Whenever Mrs. De Winter attempts to make change at Manderley, Mrs. Danvers describes how Rebecca ran it when she was alive. Each time Mrs. Danvers does this, she implies that Mrs. De Winter lacks the experience and knowledge necessary for running an important estate. Mm-hmm. Cowed by Mrs. Danvers' imposing manner and other members of West County Society's unwavering reverence for Rebecca, Mrs. De Winter becomes isolated.
Army Hammer's, or Maxim's sister, also, was really fond of Rebecca, and she talks about her a lot, so...
Although she's a lot nicer to...
Yeah, she's a lot nicer to, the new Mrs. De Winter. She's really sweet to her.
Yeah. Unless you're Mrs. Danvers, everyone's like, you're not like her, and that's okay.
It's okay
to be different. Yeah. And then she's like, well, what was she like? And they're like, oh, better than you.
Better than you. I mean.
But it's okay. You're different. Yeah, better than you. But yeah.
Different.
Different. But better than you. But in a better way. Different. Like, different, but better. Like, you're different, but not as good.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
It's like off-brand Coke.
Yeah.
It's like different. It's not the same as Coke, but it's also not good. You're just the odd.
You're just falling short.
You're just falling short. But hey, you're just a different person. So it's okay. And she's like, I don't feel better. And they're like, that was a very uplifting speech I gave you.
I thought it was very compelling.
I thought it was compelling. You know, Rebecca would have loved that. Mrs. De Winter is soon convinced that Maxim regrets his decision to marry her and is still deeply in love with the seemingly perfect Rebecca. The climax occurs at Manderley's annual costume ball.
Also, Maxim is definitely not near as mean as he is in the first one. He's not, like, there's one scene, which is coming up, where he kind of gets upset, but also it's for more understandable.
They talk so much about his famous temper, and then he's, like, never angry.
Yeah, he gets angry once, and I'm like, well, I mean, I might be a little upset, too, if that happened.
I would be upset.
Yeah, which is the costume party. So, earlier in the movie, Mrs. Danvers was commenting on, like, a painting of one of the ancestors, and was like, that's Mr. De Winter's favorite, that dress.
Yeah, that happens, like, pretty early in the film.
Yeah, so then she's like, and then her lady's maid comes to her and she's like,
Clarice.
Oh, Clarice.
It's the same one.
Yes.
It's the same universe.
So Clarice is like, oh, I think you would be a great idea. You would look so beautiful in that red gown in that painting. And so she's like, that's a great idea. So that's what she's doing for the costume party.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, here we go. Mrs. Danvers manipulates Mrs. De Winter into wearing a replica of the dress shown in a portrait of one of the house's former inhabitants, hiding the fact that Rebecca wore the same costume to much acclaim shortly before her death. Mrs. De Winter has a drummer announce her entrance using the name of the lady in the portrait, Caroline De Winter. When Mrs. De Winter shows Maxim the dress, he angrily orders her to change. Shortly after the ball, Mrs. Danvers reveals her contempt for the new Mrs. De Winter. This is Mrs. Danvers is way meaner in this movie.
Yeah, okay, she's kind of like a victim in the first one to me.
Me too. She's mean in this
And she's
one.
Also, like, way gayer in the first one.
Oh, yeah, they really toned down the gay.
Which I think they should have just, you know, pumped it up.
Well, it's like, they made her and Rebecca not the same age.
Yeah.
So they made it like she had, like, cared for Rebecca since she was, like, a kid.
Which is very creepy.
Which is like, well, now they can't have fucked because, like...
That's weird.
Scary.
Scary.
And they made Rebecca very straight, I think.
Yeah.
They were like, the men. She was obsessed with her horde of yes. men. And I was like, aw, I just saw Rebecca.
But then in the end, we do see that, like, Mrs. Danvers was in love with Rebecca the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's, like, really confusing.
It is.
And I think they should have just... I like how homoerotic the original one is.
Me too.
Especially really... whenever, like, Mrs. Danvers comes on to the new Mrs. De Winter.
They took out
a lot. Like, the scene where she's, like...
But they made her a lot meaner.
Yes. And older.
Yes, and older.
She was just ugly in the first one.
Nah, she's old.
Yeah.
She's not ugly in this, she's just old. There was, like, a scene... So, like, right before the ball, Mrs. De Winter tries to fire her. She gives her this big sob story about how she's gonna be out of work and all this stuff. And so, then she's like, okay, well, what if, you know, can you help teach me how to run this house? I don't know how to run the house. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Danvers like, okay. And then they have this little montage of best friend moments.
Yes, weird.
And it's like, haha, we're doing so much fun.
I hate it.
And then the ball happens. And the ball, by the way, is such a weird scene to me.
It's very dreamlike.
It feels so out of...
I think
place.
Yeah, it does. But I think when we go back to the beginning, you know, obviously she was dreaming
yes.
the entire time. So I think it makes a little bit more sense. But I think if you haven't seen the movie like we have, I think you would have lost that.
I think there is a bit. I disagree with it being a dream.
Yeah,
because most of it is pretty like straightforward
yes.
plot narrative. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, like, you have this one sequence where things are really bizarre
yeah.
and the lighting gets weird and yeah. the people act weird. And, like, I didn't mind when she was, like, running through the dancing crowd. I was like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fine. I understand, like, the claustrophobia. That was fine when it was, like, she was trying to get to Maxim.
Yeah.
But then when she sees the lady in the red dress and
yeah.
it's supposed to be Rebecca or whatever... And then that's all weird. And then the lights and everyone chanting Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is bizarre.
Bizarre.
And then...
It did take me out of it.
And then just skipping ahead, just to skip ahead a little bit. At the end, when she, like, wakes up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I already forgot that this was supposed to be a dream. I know in the very beginning, she's like, I went to Mandalay.
I dreamt that I went to Mandalay.
And I know that that happens, but by the time you get there, I've forgotten that
yeah.
that happened.
Yeah.
Because it's such a... It's, like, nothing else in the movie's like that at all.
Yeah.
It's just really... I was like, maybe we should have just stuck with a normal-ass plot for this one. It seems like maybe we should have just stuck with the memory. Anyway, Mrs. Danvers reveals her contempt for the new Mrs. De Winter, believing she is trying to replace Rebecca, and reveals her deep, unhealthy obsession with the dead woman. Mrs. Danvers tries to get Mrs. De Winter to commit suicide by encouraging her to jump out the window.
This scene is really gay in the first one.
Yeah.
And it's not here.
Nah, it's just...
It's disappointing.
Mean. However, she is thwarted at the last moment by the distance... by the disturbance occasioned by a nearby shipwreck. A diver investigating the wrecked ship's hull condition also discovers the remains of Rebecca's sailing boat with her decomposed body still on board. The discovery causes Maxim to confess to Mrs. De Winter that his marriage to Rebecca was a sham. Rebecca, Maxim reveals, was a cruel and selfish woman who manipulated everyone around her into believing her the perfect wife and the paragon of virtue. On the night of her death, she told Maxim she was pregnant with another man's child, mm-hmm. which she would raise under the pretense that it was Maxim's, and he would be powerless to stop her.
Also, she's fucking her cousin.
Oh, yeah. And it's her cousin's baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably.
That's what she's, like, insinuating, mm-hmm. is that it's her cousin's baby.
In a rage, Maxim shot her through the heart and then disposed of her body by placing it in her boat and sinking it in the sea. Mrs. De Winter thinks little of Maxim's murder confession, but is relieved to hear that Maxim has always loved her and never Rebecca, which is, I think this is the funniest part of both movies.
Yes.
That she just doesn't
care
shit
about the murder.
She's like, you never loved her?
She's
like, wow, I also hate Rebecca. Oh my god, I hate her too. She deserved to be dead. Can't we, like, let her die? That's, like, what she wants. Rebecca's boat is raised, and it is discovered to have been deliberately sunk. At an inquest, brings the verdict of suicide. However, Rebecca's first cousin and lover, Jack Favell, attempts to blackmail Maxim, claiming to have proof that she could not have intended suicide based on a note she sent him the night she died. It is revealed that Rebecca had an appointment with a doctor in London shortly before her death, presumably to confirm her pregnancy. When the doctor is found, he reveals that Rebecca had cancer and would have died within a few months. Furthermore, due to the malformation of the uterus, she could never have been pregnant. Mm-hmm. Maxim assumes that Rebecca, knowing she would die, manipulated him into killing her quickly. Mrs. Danvers has said that after the inquiry, Rebecca feared nothing except dying a lingering death. Maxim feels a great sense of foreboding and insists on driving through the night to return to Manderley. However, before he comes inside of the house, it is clear from a glow on the horizon and windborne ashes that it is ablaze. Mrs. Danvers commits suicide by drowning herself in the sea. Before that, she curses Mrs. De Winter of never knowing happiness. Contrary to that, Mrs. De Winter finds herself content in fighting for love, and together she and Maxim are in search of their new dream home.
Yeah, they go to Cairo, and I think it should be mentioned that whenever the discovery is initially made by Mrs. De Winter, because she sneaks into the doctor's office and gets the manuscripts that say that she had cancer.
Yeah, the whole inquest is like, everyone, in the first one, people were like very hesitant to believe that Maxim could have killed her. People are like, oh, he killed her.
Yeah.
And only after basically proving that it couldn't have been him, although we know that it was him.
Also, I do get confused with, like, he would have shot her, so wouldn't there have been, like,
A shot
damage?
I also wonder that, too. I wonder if that's why they made him shoot her, like, in the stomach area.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
if it was going through just tissue.
Yeah, if it's just hitting artery and not bone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I don't know, though.
I mean, they kind of mention it where they're like, well, she was at sea, so there's no physical evidence. And it's like, well, I mean, yeah, but if you bash someone over the head and their skull cracks in, guess what? Even after their tissue decays away, you can still tell it was blunt force trauma.
Yep, yep.
There are certain things that they blast past skin. Also, she still had her hair. So,
yeah, so,
which, by the way, she was at sea for a year.
Fish would have eaten that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the salt water might have preserved her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, like, some question there of, like, how preserved could she possibly be? Also, I like the part when they're like, how could you have mistakenly identified a stranger as your wife? And he's like, well, her face was torn off and her all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's a really dumb question to ask. Because if your wife had been at sea for 2 months, they would be unrecognizable.
Yes.
Like, anyone would be unrecognizable. It could have really actually been Mrs. De Winter. And he's like, well, I easily could have. And I'm like, how do people think that it's, like, weird that he made that mistake?
Yeah.
I would be like, also, he is the worst lawyer of all time.
Oh my God, he's terrible.
His lawyer never says anything. whenever the note is like, first of all, okay, I don't know how the 1940s law system works that much.
This is actually set in 1935.
Okay, I don't know how the 1930s law system works, but here's the thing. If you just brought up a check for £10,000 and you were like, I have this proof, if I was a lawyer, I'd be like, I'm sorry, that was not admitted into evidence.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that as possible evidence for this inquest. And me as a lawyer would be saying, well, what's that check for? What, do you have it written down? Do you have a record proving mm-hmm. that it wasn't for something else? Because my client, or you could just be like, my client actually called me
mm-hmm.
and told me that this man tried to, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Horrible lawyer. Also, that lawyer should have been going to the doctor to get the records. He didn't. The other guys.
What? Listen, Mrs. De Winter took care of it before you did.
Literally, what kind of, you're rich. Where's your lawyer? You couldn't afford a better lawyer? I mean, geez Louise. What a bad lawyer. Literally, what a bad lawyer. He never even said a word during the case. I was like, Maxim, here's the thing. In 1935, Maxim should get off even if he did shoot her in the heart out of cold-blooded murder. She was cheating on him.
Listen, it's 1935. They would have been like, honor killing.
Honor killing. Crime of passion. I mean, maybe he would have served a little time.
But it's second-degree murder by a white man, a wealthy white man in 1935.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
Her parents are dead. Like, she's not wealthy. Yeah. I mean, yeah, people liked her, but whatever.
Yeah.
The staff liked her. Mm-hmm. Easy.
Yeah.
It should be an open and shut case. He has the worst lawyer in all of history, maybe. And the harshest judge, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is an article from Mashable, which is how it's called How Netflix's Rebecca Ending is Different from the Book. Mm. So the climax of Rebecca in both the book and the movie is the reveal that Rebecca De Winter was a sociopath and a serial cheater. When her body is discovered, Maxim confesses to shooting Rebecca dead in her cottage by the sea and covering up her murder by locking her corpse in the cabin of her boat and sinking it off the coast. The inquisition into Rebecca's death is different in the book. It is not public or held in a courthouse, as the movie portrays, and does not end with Maxim being arrested, as it does in this film. In the book, the inquisition is private and Maxim is never detained. The broad strokes of the ending from there are the same, with Rebecca's cousin Jack Favell producing a note from the night of Rebecca's death and calling the suicide verdict into question. But the manner of finding the doctor who diagnosed Rebecca's cancer falls differently. In the book, finding Dr. Baker is a more civil affair, with Maxim, the inspector, Jack, and the unnamed narrator waiting until the next day to call on the doctor together to find out why she made her appointment. The movie adds more drama to the discovery and has the unnamed narrator drive to London alone to discover the truth by herself, with the inspector trailing after her. The overall result is the same. Rebecca's cancer was terminal, and the meaning of her final conversation with Maxim changes. She goaded him into killing her to spare her the pain of dying slowly and ruin his life in the wake of her death. The other difference is Manderley. The image, or rather the suggestion of Manderley burning to the ground, is the closing paragraph of Rebecca the novel. Maxim and the unnamed narrator drive up from London, having cleared Maxim's name of Rebecca's murder, and notice a red glare on the horizon as they approach their home. The unnamed narrator mistakes it for the dawn, but Maxim's reaction and the flakes of ash in the air make the final image unmistakable. Manderley is aflame. The movie continues past this moment to show the De Winters approaching Manderley and making sure their servants are alive, which leads to the film's newly fabricated ending for Mrs. Danvers, see below. Mrs. Danvers' fate is one of the movie's biggest deviations from Du Maurier's ending. In the book, it is only hinted that Danvers set the fire at Manderley, but in the film, she is shown strewing gasoline, lighting the house on fire, and confessing her crime and her feelings for Rebecca to the unnamed narrator. Shortly after her confession, she dies by suicide when she throws herself into the same sea Rebecca drowned in. In the book, Danvers is presumed alive after the fire. The unnamed narrator wonders what Danvers is doing now in the book's opening chapters. The subtext of her love for Rebecca remains subtext in the novel as well, while the film's version of Danvers is more or less explicit about her romantic feelings for the late and terrible Mrs. Rebecca De Winter. Even though Rebecca, the book, ends with the image of Manderley burning, readers know what happened after the book after, because the book's first two chapters are written from the unnamed narrator's perspective long after the fire. Mm. The narrator describes her post-Manderley life with Maxim as an unglamorous but comfortable existence where they live in shabby hotels, get hype about reading cricket scores in English newspapers, and do their damnedest never to think about Manderley or Rebecca again. It's not a particularly romantic, with the narrator saying, "Our little hotel is dull and the food is indifferent," and emphasizing the peace and security over her relationship with Maxim. But hey, her husband is a murderer, and they've been through a lot. The movie makes the De Winters' escape from England a much sexier affair and ends with the happy couple being fully in love with each other at a gorgeous hotel in Egypt. For the record, author Daphne du Maurier did not consider Rebecca a romance and was famously annoyed with people who interpreted it as such.
The movie is a lot closer to the book that way.
Yeah.
Like, the movie still obviously, the first movie still hints that, or explicitly says Mrs. Danvers set the fire. Yes. Those kinds of things.
Yeah. So there's a lot more subtext in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds more like the book is more dramatic.
Yeah, I think it's more like the book is like a psychological thriller, I think, more so than like a romance.
Yeah, okay, this is my number one problem with Rebecca, both of them.
Okay.
It's clearly not a romance.
Yes.
And trying to make it one, well, also, it just doesn't have a lot of romance. There's romance in the beginning, there's romance at the end, and that's it.
That's it.
And all the rest of it is, like, the psychological thriller.
Yeah.
But it feels like they're so focused on her, like, romantic feelings for Maxim mm-hmm. that it's like, this is boring.
Yes, it is.
Nothing is happening between them. And I'm not worried for her state of being. I'm not worried mm-hmm. about her. Because, like, nothing is happening. Yeah. I want to see more, like, gaslighting.
I think that's what the book is more about.
That's what I want. I want to see more, like, making the new Mrs. De Winter feel crazy.
Yes.
I want to see more, like, is Rebecca really... And in the movie, too, I noticed it's like, is Rebecca really haunting them?
Yeah.
Like, that's like a kind of question that they ask, like, with all the birds and mm-hmm. stuff. It's like, oh, is Rebecca actually there? And it's like, No.
Yeah, no.
But
I like the idea of, like, the memory haunting.
I like the idea of, like, she's going crazy and starting to think maybe Rebecca is real and maybe I am really being haunted.
Mrs. Danvers is kind of driving her insane.
And I like that. But it feels like both movies focus more on the her trying to win over Maxim angle, which is really boring.
The most boring part of the
film. Maxim's, like, hardly even in the movie. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's hot, but, like, so what?
So what? It's more about her. It's so boring. Mm-hmm. Like, the most interesting parts are her and Mrs. Danvers, like, having these, like, mind-fuck conversations.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really do enjoy the scene, like, the lingerie scene. Like, it's very creepy.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
Yes. And those are the best scenes. Like, the scenes with her and Mrs. Danvers.
When Mrs. Danvers being weirdly obsessive and,
the
like...
The scene where she confronts Mrs. Danvers and is like, you made me wear the costume. Like, those scenes are so much more interesting than, like...
Maxim.
She tries to call Maxim. She talks about Maxim. She just tries to grab onto Maxim, and he's upset. That's like 90% of this movie is her being like, Maxim, and him being like, no.
No.
So boring. And the movie is long.
Yes.
There's so much stuff that I'm like, could this not have been cut? Could this not have been cut to save us? Like, could we not have gotten it down to an hour 30?
I didn't know he was in here. There's a baby in here the whole time.
Hi, Sterling.
Sterling boy. Yeah, so that's also my main problem with Rebecca, because the book really makes it seem like it's like a psychological drama thriller.
Yeah. It's just kind of boring. Both of them are kind of boring. This one, I had to take multiple, like, stops and starts because I just got so bored.
Yeah, I agree.
And I was like, it's good acting, it's beautiful, the costumes are great, mm-hmm. I appreciate how they updated it, but it's just like, could we not make it more interesting?
Yeah, agreed. I think its weak point was the plot.
Yeah. Agreed.
Everything else was really nice, I thought. Agreed. I really like Armie Hammer and Lily James's actors, and I thought they had good chemistry.
My cat's about to jump up here, I think. Maybe. I think he may got distracted. Well, what are you doing?
Little boy. What would you give this movie?
There he goes. I don't know. Maybe like a don't step on the keyboard. Yeah. Go to Jane. Just let her hold you. Maybe like a 6 out of 10.
I would agree.
It's really, really hard for me to get over, like, the story being kind of insufferable.
Yeah, same.
Okay, well, I have a review.
Cool.
This is called 1 out of 10. I would frankly use the word crime against cinema. It's a crime, not against Hitchcock, but against Daphne du Maurier's story and its
character.
Du Maurier. Mm-hmm. Story and its characters, against cinema and against good taste. First, the people who wrote this have not understood the story. There should be an age difference between Maxim and Mrs. De Winter. That's important. They're supposed to be, like, apparently, like, 20 years apart.
Yeah.
That's important because they are not supposed to understand each other before Rebecca's body is discovered. Instead of speaking freely and asking bluntly, how did your wife die in the first meeting, she's supposed to be shy, not experienced, but well-educated. She comes, however, from a different social standing, and no, this is not a question of discrimination, that's simply how it was. And in the film, and I think the novel, she is not barred from the terrace of the hotel, she is simply sitting at another table next to Maxim. The woman playing Mrs. Van Hopper is a disaster. She looks like a drunk old hippie and absolutely not like a 1930s American millionaire. The scene where she mocks the girl with her friend or acquaintances is in terrible bad taste and unthinkable. Also unnecessary. If you make a 1930s movie, it's not just about cars and dresses. You have to understand the mentality. And that mentality is a very important part of this story. Also, girls wouldn't know about 3.5-liter Bentleys because their father liked cars. This whole thing is a disaster. The one star I give the movie is for Armie Hammer, the only one who seems to know more or less what he's doing, though he seems to be drowning in an ocean of stupidity. Like someone else said, if you can't do better, you'd better do nothing. Or ask someone who knows something about it. Okay. I agree with certain aspects of this. Like, mm-hmm. I do agree that there are certain aspects of, like, this movie is pretty updated.
Yeah.
It's in its sensibilities, definitely. Mm-hmm. Like, Rebecca 1940s, it seems, like, very cold to us, but, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not, it's like, that's how people were.
Yeah, exactly.
This is exactly how they treated each other. And this was normal. This would have been romantic.
Everything's a transaction.
Exactly. But I like that they attempted to kind of update it so that we could understand the modern sensibilities, like, a tiny bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes it a more romantic story. It does make it a bit more compelling for the modern viewer.
Especially a modern woman.
I do think that there is something to be said that, like, maybe this story just doesn't work in the modern era.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there are certain aspects of Rebecca that just don't really work anymore because this is not a life that anyone lives anymore. Yeah. And it's not a life anyone has lived for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think that... I think Rebecca is maybe just a movie we shouldn't remake.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe a movie that...
The last one.
I think maybe Rebecca is a thing that would... It would take a lot to really update it to a point where a modern audience could really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. It's just an old tale.
It's just an old tale.
Oh. Ugh. Yeah.
It's
just kind of
boring.
It's kind of exhausting.
It's long. It's a really long story.
Yeah.
No, it's like it has like a fair amount of stuff happening and the pacing is fine. There's like nothing in particular that's like, oh, this really dragged it down. It's just like the plot is not that interesting. Yeah. Especially once you know what's going to happen. Like we just watched the other one.
Exactly.
There is no element of like
surprise.
It's like, I know what's going to happen. They didn't change anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally they did not change a single plot point. They just made her they just updated it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I was thinking about why I gave the 1941 a higher review, and I think it's probably because I really just appreciate how, like, the auteur Alfred Hitchcock directs films. It's really compelling, and it's, like, obviously, it was very groundbreaking for the time, especially with all the shadows that he does in the original, all the plays.
I also think it's just, even though Alfred Hitchcock's is longer, it doesn't feel longer.
No, it doesn't.
It feels shorter.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of that, it's not that the actors are better, because they're not.
No.
It's not that, it's just that, like, the story fits with the time a lot better, and it makes, like, a lot more sense. There's a lot more, like, that compels you.
Yeah.
Versus in this, it's just, like, I don't know, it's, like, it's a lot to look at, but not a lot of substance.
Yeah. Yeah, style over substance.
Yeah.
I would say.
I just think maybe this is a thing that does not work in the modern era, and that updating it, I don't think, helped it out any. I would have been... I really, really am disappointed they did not go more with the gay angle.
Yeah!
But I would have loved to have seen more about Rebecca.
Yeah.
I was hoping this movie was going to elaborate on who Rebecca is.
Yeah.
And more about her and Mrs. Danvers and more about that, but
and also, like, talk about how Mrs. Danvers does try to seduce the new Mrs. De Winter, at least in the first one.
I would have loved to, a few things I would have loved to see in this movie. More gay.
Yes.
More backstory on Rebecca, who she is, what did she look like, who was she, all this stuff.
More gaslighting.
More gaslighting. That's
the scary part of it.
And more gaslighting. Mm-hmm. That would have been ideal to make this movie a lot more compelling.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of scenes that while I was watching it, I was like, this movie is 2 hours long and this scene is in here.
Yeah.
This could have gone.
This could have.
Some of the party planning.
Oh my God.
Some of the actual.
The montage.
At the actual party. I was like, some of this just does not need to be in here. Some, like, of her dreams where she's, like, chasing Maxim.
Mm-hmm.
Maxim sleepwalking. All these things are not important. They did not add to the story. They didn't make me feel worse for her. They didn't add anything to the characters. If anything, it muddled Maxim's character a lot.
Yeah.
It didn't hint at his guilt anymore. It just, like, muddled everything a lot more. I don't know.
Yeah. I think the old one's probably a little bit more compelling for me.
I agree. And I think it just is a really good movie in black and white.
It is a great movie in black and white. It really sets, and that's why Alfred Hitchcock chose to do it in black and white. He made the deliberate decision.
It's a good choice.
It's a good choice. It really sets the scene, and I think that Hitchcock is really good at not adding superfluous scenes.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely like, this scene needs to have a purpose.
Yeah, and I also think another thing with Alfred Hitchcock's, like, the pacing is... Even though it's longer...
He's the master of suspense.
Yeah. Even though it's longer, it's like the pacing is better. They speak more. So you have... There's a lot more, like, listening and paying... Active, like, paying attention. Mm-hmm. Versus this movie has a lot of silence.
Yes.
Like,
a lot of gazes.
A lot of gazes. And it's like, oh my God, how much of that do we need?
Yeah.
How much of that do we need? It's a... You need to keep my attention.
Yes.
And it didn't. It didn't keep my attention. And it's weird because it's basically the exact same movie as the first one, and in my opinion, with better acting. But
I still think the
1941's
I still think the 1941's better.
I agree. It just doesn't. It doesn't. It's almost like it feels very like fake.
Yeah.
If that, like...
Forced.
It feels, yeah, it feels very forced. It feels like we're trying really hard to be in the 1940s while simultaneously trying really hard to not be in the 1940s. Yes. And it's like, pick.
Yeah, whereas the 1940s one obviously is like full throttle.
Yeah, because I mean it was.
Yeah.
And it was like 5 years ago we yeah. remembered what that was like. Yes. So, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
I wouldn't watch it again.
I wouldn't watch it again either.
It's boring.
I wouldn't either. Yeah. So, you guys can watch the original Rebecca on YouTube for free.
Yes, this one's on Netflix.
Yeah, so, if you guys want to watch it, you know,
compare, see what you think.
Yeah. I think the first one is, the only Alfred Hitchcock film to ever win Best Picture.
It's insane.
Which is wild to me. Like, Psycho didn't even do it.
I don't think it's his best.
I don't think it's his best either. I think The Birds is way better. I think Rear Window is way, 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 way better.
Yeah, agreed.
Rear Window is, like, a masterclass.
So good.
It's so compelling good. And, like, edgy of your seat, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
even, like...
Even now you're like, whoa!
I know. Well.
Yeah. Whew, whew. All right, guys. So next week on Patreon, we are going to be doing Run, which is the new Sarah Paulson movie coming out on Hulu. And then...
We'll see.
We'll see. We're not sure what we're doing. But we'll post about it.
All right, guys.
Bye!